what are the parameters of how you subjected yourself
because
to the jurisdiction?
Because those people can't ever come.
Yeah.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Tuesday, April 14th at 5:30 p.m. First item on the agenda is a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2394.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2394 comes to you from Representative Collin at the request of the Oregon Sheriff's Association. Allow service of subpoena on witness under the age of 14 by delivering a copy to the witness or the witness's parents, a guardian litem. Likewise, other matters as it relates to delivery of subpoenas by sheriffs and others. Chair, members of the committee, that's it.
Okay. Brian Wallace and Tammy Wood, please.
Good evening, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Tammy Wood, and I'm a captain with the Linn County Sheriff's Office down in Albany. I'm here representing my sheriff. And to my right is Brian Wallace. He's the Chief Civil Deputy at Marion County Sheriff's Office. House Bill 2394 makes three changes to the law. Basically, one, allows us to serve subpoenas to juveniles under the age of 14 instead of to the juvenile themselves, to their parent or their guardian, since the parent or guardian is most likely the person to arrange their transportation to and from the courthouse. We found that the younger the witness, the less likely they are to understand what the subpoena means, and some of them have in the past. In the case of one of our colleagues, they had to serve a 3- and 5-year-old, and they were extremely upset and scared at what this was, and they had to do it because that's what the law said they had to do. We did speak with the District Attorneys Association, who they were initially opposed to the language, but as we spoke to them, they came to the realization they were not going to be holding a juvenile in contempt for not being brought to the courthouse, and they are fine with that. The second part of the bill cleans up some language regarding service of subpoenas to law enforcement officers. As it's written, you can either serve the officer by personal service, or if it's more than 10 days out, you can serve it to a person who's designated at the agency. The way it's written, sometimes it's interpreted differently, so we've just cleaned up that language to make it clear that personal service has to be made personally at any time. However, if you're going to use the 10-day rule, it has to be either to personally serve within the 10 days or you can't serve the person who is designated by the agency. And the third change makes a small change to the stalking order statutes. Although the statute is labeled service of order, entry of order into law enforcement data systems, the statute was silent on how we were to serve the orders. This directs that a personal service be made and that it also be a copy instead of a true copy. If we serve a copy, we will be able to fax them back and forth between the sheriffs, as we're able to now on restraining orders. And I thank you for the opportunity to appear and would entertain any questions.
Okay, go ahead first. We'll see if there are any questions.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, I'm Brian Wallace. I'm the Chief Civil Deputy at the Marion County Sheriff's Office. And I'm just going to make it real quick. I'm going to echo everything that my colleague from Linn County says. I know that you have a more pressing bill to get to. I just also want to add to the subpoena portion of this bill. You know, when we go out to schools to serve children, or we go to homes, parents and school administrators kind of look at us kind of dumbfounded as to why we're serving these small children, witnesses, these subpoenas, because, well, they're beyond their comprehension. And this is a good bill, and it's going to save us some time as far as any sort of non-compliance with the subpoena. There's other mechanisms for a district attorney or an attorney in general who's issuing these subpoenas to gain compliance from the parent or guardian. One might ask, well, why doesn't DA or an attorney use a subpoena, deuces tecum, directed to the parent and have them bring forth their child? Well, my answer to that question, if it's being thought of, is that a lot of times attorneys don't know that the witness that they're subpoenaing into court is in fact a child under the age of 14. So this kind of gives us a mechanism and them to expedite service. And the other two parts of the bill is just literally cleanup language for the service on a law enforcement officer. It doesn't change anything. It's just making it cleaner. And then the stalking protective order is pretty self-explanatory, and I would be happy to answer any questions any of you would have.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions about this bill? We've kind of gone over before. Okay, thank you. Don't leave. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2394. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2395.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2395 comes to you from Representative Cowart at the request of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Eliminates requirement of the Department of Revenue, Department of Human Services, Department of Corrections, Department of Transportation, Employment Division, when collecting certain specified debts, serve warrant the local sheriff where the debtor resides.
Thank you. Okay, and if you remember, this is the one where a sheriff has to walk across the street to deliver a piece of paper where a clerk could do it, but now because of the law, they can't. So, please.
Members of the committee, this House bill does make a change to a large number of statutes, but most of those statutes are written exactly the same, and they all affect different state agencies. And the way the statute is written is probably what was reflected years and years and years ago, is that the warrant was sent to the sheriff, we recorded the warrant, which then made it a judgment, and then we went out and tried to find property. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. And one reason is because most of the state agencies are able to, through the statute, do a lot of their own collection actions. And so basically what we do is we take the paper in. There's a statutory fee of $6.25. We walk it either across the street or, in my case, downstairs to file it with the clerk, and that's it. What this bill would do is take us out of the middle process. The agencies could send it directly to the clerk, saving them the $6.25 expense. That it leaves in place their ability to either use us to enforce or to use their own agents to enforce those. I was only able to get 16 of the 36 counties to give me how many distraint warrants they processed. However, just in those 16 counties, the sheriffs were paid nearly $40,000 for those last fiscal year. And so we believe if you took all of the counties and eliminated that, there's a potential of saving the state over $100,000 per biennium.
We like those, especially this year. Hey, you want to add anything to that?
The only thing that I would add to that, Chair Barker and members, is that in my county alone, we received roughly 1,500 distraint warrants, mostly from the Employment Department. We're just acting as the middleman. There's no requirement other than us having to physically take the paper and take it to the front counter of the county clerk's office for recording. As much as we would love to receive $6.25 to do that, I think it's in the best interest of the citizens of this state and sheriff's offices to stop doing that and save quite a bit of money for all of us.
Okay. So, any questions? Okay, thank you very much. We'll probably go into work session later on, but we'll move this other bill through. We've got a lot of people waiting to speak.
Thank
Close
you.
The public hearing on House Bill 2394 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3364. Representative Widener and Westnam, please. I'm not Westnam, I'm sorry. Thatcher, you stay where you are.
Close.
Yeah. Close. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, and as you can see, many members that are on this committee are actually on this bill. It's a bipartisan bill. House Bill 3364 came about when I was just sitting and we were discussing of revenue impacts and how we could help the state with issues that we're going to be facing in the budget climate that we're in, and we were looking at what other states had going on, and this is one of the bills that we came up with. And summary of the bill, certain aliens who are incarcerated in state prison and who have been convicted of nonviolent offenses may receive early conditional release if they have final order order of removal with voluntary participation agreed upon not to return to the United States under duress facing federal imprisonment. This agreement would be considered by parties that include the judge and victims as prescribed by Oregon Constitution. If aliens reenter the United States, House Bill 3364 will provide for revocation of parole and confinement of for the remainder of the alien's original sentence. Additionally, aliens may be prosecuted under federal statutes that provide for up to 20 years in prison for illegally reentering the United States. I believe in this concept, and I'm adding an amendment that would make eligibility into the program only for those who commit victimless crimes. As we can combat drug possession and DUII, we can prevent victim crimes before they happen. And one of the reasons this came about was with discussion that we had with multiple sheriffs, different victim groups that we were in contact with, and it was they wanted to make sure that people were being prosecuted or serving time for crimes that were committed against victims. So that's where that amendment came about. And this bill acts as another tool in the toolbox for judges during sentence hearings that will create massive savings to the government. According to our conversation with Jack Bennett, who assists Neil Clark, the regional ICE director who oversees Alaska, Washington, and Oregon, ICE has seen that 90% of those deported have remained in their country of origin. Washington in 2008 deported 10,000 illegal aliens. Only 1,200 have returned. 188 of those 1,200 deportees, 2%, are being prosecuted by U.S. Attorney General under 8 U.S.C. 1326 felony reentry. On top of significant savings related to housing inmates, this program has added benefits of reducing Oregon criminal alien prison population and would be a logical part of any comprehensive plan to reduce the prison population. Not only is this program fiscally responsible, it's socially responsible. We are attempting to save massive tax dollars for Oregon citizens that can therefore be placed into treatment programs, social safety nets, and public safety. According to national ICE statistics, Oregon can save nearly $17 million a year with this program. House Bill 3364 is just another tool in the toolbox for judges at sentencing hearings and can include the option of entering into this the criminal can have the option of entering into this program under House Bill 3364. If they continue to do right by victims, we are responsible to enact legislation that will include participation by victims during sentencing. In the last year, Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, and Georgia have begun participating in the Rapid Repat program. Christine Gregoire, Governor of Washington, is considering a similar bill at this time in the state of Washington. And that concludes my testimony for House Bill 3364.
Thank you.
Okay, for the record, I'm Kim Thatcher, representing Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And as some of you know, bills relating to immigration reform have been highly, up on my list of priorities for the past few sessions. And one of the key concepts that we're dealing with here is reducing the cost on our criminal justice system. Last session and this session, I drafted a memorial to Congress to urge the federal government to reimburse Oregon for the cost our taxpayers have to cover for housing illegal criminal aliens in our state prisons. According to the Department of Corrections, in Oregon, during fiscal year 2008, Oregon spent more than $37 million on criminal aliens. Approximately a little over 2,000 of these inmates were housed for more than 4 days. $37 million, yet we are only reimbursed by the federal government for $6.5 million, and that's through a program called SCAP, the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program. And if you look at the average monthly count in Oregon's prison system, you'll see probably more than 2,000 inmates with ICE detainers. And we took a shot and snapshot at 1 month in late 2007, and approximately a third of those inmates on the monthly list were there for nonviolent reasons. They were nonviolent offenders housed for drug offenses or offenses such as burglary, forgery, car theft, driving offenses, and such. I believe this REPAT program would go a long way towards helping to ease the burden of illegal immigration on our criminal justice system here in Oregon, and It would be also good to see a measure to move forward which eases up state law, allowing our law enforcement agencies more flexibility in working with the federal immigration officials and require county jails to check with ICE on immigration status of offenders booked in jail. So, yeah, I think this could help us save a lot of money. It's a good time to look at it.
Any questions? Representative Krieger?
Don't know if you know this, Mr. Chair, either one of you. That $37 million, we had a $32 million figure for back in 2005, and I can see where it easily get to this. Does that include prosecution costs at the county level?
Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger, is my understanding that is just for housing, does not include any other
That's
costs.
One of the things
that
I
is my understanding.
That number really underestimates it because it also doesn't talk about the cost to the sheriffs and the counties that hold these people for a three-month sentence or up to a year, which a lot of those minor crimes, they don't get all the way to the state prison. So those numbers and those dollars of costs are going to be much higher than that. And it doesn't talk about the victims and their costs that they've got and how they've been harmed possibly financially or physically to some degree. And then we've got to remember that we're probably realizing that we're only actually apprehending and prosecuting and getting 10% of them into prison. The other 90% repeat crime after crime after crime before they're caught.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, if you look, I don't have the bill in front of me, but we included the county jails in this program, so they would be eligible for doing this as well. And that's why I'm looking at lower offenses. We did have in the original draft that you have, it was for nonviolent offenders. I wanted to make this to where all the parties were happy. After having conversations in my office with several different people, we are going to be in touch with the Mexican consulate. We have other options that will benefit the state probably greater for violent offenders and offenders basically that have a victim involved in the sentencing. So after talking with Raul Ramirez this afternoon, there's some issues that he told me about, and I think we will have a very, very good bill, and it may not be a bill, but agreement with the Mexican government on taking care of the violent offenders. So it's something we're just starting works on right now, and as soon as we have information, we will bring that before this body if we need to.
And thank you. And Representative, you and I have talked about this. There, we ran into many problems with the bill as written, so we're going to have to pretty much rewrite it in that there's victims' rights where a victim can object to the reduced sentence of somebody in. We ran into some constitutional problems with Measure 57 where it would take a two-thirds vote of this body and the Senate in order to set those people for release since the voters put that in. The parole board would have some problem with releasing, and some people would actually need to be resentenced under the Oregon law currently standing in the court where they were sentenced from, which also causes additional problems. We thought we had a good, clean, easy bill, and we found out, as always seems to happen down here, nothing's clean and easy. It's still a work in progress.
Yeah, we ran into some constitutional issues in the Oregon Constitution that other states don't have. Yeah. But it was actually a benefit that we ran into those because it opened the door for me finding these other options that we have because there's laws in the Mexican government where they will prosecute offenders in the United States. So like in Mexico, if we have somebody that comes in the U.S. or comes to Oregon and kills somebody, they can go across to Mexico. Mexico won't release them because we have the death penalty, but they will prosecute them there and sentence them there for the crime that was committed here. So what we need to do is look at an agreement with them on handling some of the aliens from their country as well. So those are things that my staff is starting work on here directly, and we got a lot of very good contacts and a lot of people in Mexico that we can get a hold of, a lot of officials that are involved in this already, and there's stuff going on at the federal level for doing this as well. So we're gathering all that information right now. So it probably worked out to be a really good thing, because now we can take crimes, the DUIs, a lot of the crimes that aren't as severe, but they're constant repeat offenders over and over again, and we can deal with them on a basis where we send them back to their own country, and if we only get 10% back, that's a reduction of 90%, and that's something I think we can live with in the state.
And Multnomah County had a case where somebody had actually gone back to Mexico that had murdered somebody up here, and they presented the case in Spanish, sent it down there. The Mexican courts reviewed that, and their court systems, as you know, quite a bit different than ours. And based on the written reports, they convicted the person who murdered down there and sent him to a long prison sentence. So any other further questions for the representatives?
No, Mr. Chair, it's evidently the Mexican Constitution does not have a confrontation clause.
Yeah, apparently not.
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Can you imagine being convicted?
Lanil Vandermolden, Jim Ludwig, and David Cross.
Funny.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Ludwig. I'm president of Oregonians for Immigration Reform, and we're very much in favor of passage of this bill. I realize there's a number of technicalities, but I'm convinced that we have the brain power in this room to overcome those, and I hope that you will be able to do so. House Bill 3364 would allow the state of Oregon to enter into an agreement with federal immigration authorities for the early release of certain prisoners who have ICE holds under very specific conditions under the Federal Rapid Repat Program. As Jim Widener has said, there are some real important conditions, the first being that the inmate themselves has to agree to be part of the program. Second of all, the inmate could not have committed a violent crime, and they would have to serve half of their prison sentence within Oregon. And if they do come back early, and part of the condition is they cannot come back illegally, they'd be subject to serving the remainder of their prison sentence here in Oregon, plus a potential 20 years in federal prison. With the upcoming budget shortfall and the rapidly growing prison population, this is an opportunity to ameliorate that situation to a certain extent. And I've heard varying numbers of the number of inmates with ICE holds in the Oregon State Penitentiary. The last I saw was 1,150, and I heard higher figures today. But if it's 1,150, that's a 20% increase over just 2 years ago. 2 years ago, there was only 900 inmates with ICE holds. If it's 1150, that's 20% in just 2 years. And at the cost of $80 per day, and I've seen variations of that too, we're looking at $33 million a year. I've heard Representative Thatcher say it was $37 million. Well, whatever. Oregon was only reimbursed by $6 million the last time by the federal government, leaving a huge pocket for Oregon taxpayers. The Rapid Repat Program is a proven success. It's been in New York since 1995. Arizona has had it for 3 years. Rhode Island has just signed on to it. Georgia has just signed on to it, as has Puerto Rico. New York has saved $190 million in incarceration costs since 1995. Arizona, in 3 years, has saved $18.5 million. And this is a statistic that's really important. Arizona has saved, on average, 210 days of incarceration costs for every inmate who's entered into that program. That's a huge amount of dollars, 210 days per inmate. Last month, Oklahoma's House, by a unanimous vote, 80-0, passed a bill that would put Oklahoma into the Rapid Repat Program. Washington Governor Gregoire, as was spoken to earlier, has asked that their legislature look at this issue the same as Oregon is looking at it. The interesting thing is, Washington, which has got about a third larger population than Oregon, has almost exactly the same number of inmates with ICE holds. The state of Washington, at least the governor's office, estimates that they would save about $9 million if they would sign up for this program. With the passage of Measure 57, obviously there's going to be some push at the jail level. We're going to have a lot more prisoners who are going to be incarcerated. With a projected budget shortfall and a rapidly growing prison population, House Bill 3364 is the right bill at the right time, and I urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. And the discrepancy in those numbers of 33 to 37 million, also there's huge medical costs of people in prison, and those have to be met by community standards, and the Oregon Department of Corrections sort of runs like a huge HMO, their own HMO on that. I mean, and that can't be reimbursed by the feds while people are in prison, and so if people need this care, I mean, it's huge costs there also that we might be saving.
Thank you.
Please.
Chairman Barker, members of the committee, I also am very pleased with this bill. I think it's a common sense bill that will not only save us money, but also protect the welfare.
I'm sorry, you need to state your name for the record. Thank you.
I'm Lenine Vandermolen, and I'm pleased to see that this is a bipartisan bill also. Now, I would like to refer back to a previous speaker who was talking about DUIs, and I had a question about that myself, because as I looked at the bill, I couldn't understand from the legalistic wording, given my education, whether drunk driving illegal aliens that had been incarcerated would qualify for being a part of that program. But if they're not, I'm wondering if it's possible to include them, because it seems like every time I read the newspaper about a driving fatality, it involves another drunk driving illegal alien. And I'm at the point where I think of fellow Oregonians as either being collateral damage or collateral damage that's going to happen. And it has hit very close to home now that a woman in my church, her name is Taya Blazer, had her 23-year-old granddaughter run over and killed in Oregon City 5 months ago by a drunk driving illegal alien. So it starts hitting very close to home. I think this is a common sense bill. If you can get those drunk driving illegal aliens included, it will save the welfare of Oregonians.
Okay, thank you very much.
My name is David Cross. I'm from Salem, Oregon. Chairman Barker, representatives, I'm asking the 2009 Oregon State Legislature to pass House Bill 3364 so the state of Oregon and county sheriffs can participate in a federal program called Rapid Repat, removal of eligible parolees accepted for transfer. On January 1st, 2009, there were 1,136 foreign national criminal aliens and prisoners incarcerated by the state. All 1,136 criminal alien prisoners incarcerated on January 1st by Department of Corrections had immigration customs enforcement hold placed on them by ICE. Criminal aliens made up approximately 8.33% of the January 1st state prison population. Reviewing the numbers and types of crime committed against Oregon's legal United States citizens and documented foreign nationals by the 1,136 criminal aliens incarcerated on the January 1st in Oregon state prisons, the crimes included 4 for arson, 160 for assault, 35 for burglary, 32 for driving offenses, 128 for drugs, 5 for forgery, 161 for homicide, 49 for kidnapping, 42 for other, I'm not sure what that is, 162 for rape, 86 for robbery, 174 for sexual abuse, 70 for sodomy, 19 for theft, and 9 for vehicle theft. The prison population numbers, types of crimes, and incarceration rates do not reflect monetary and public safety costs criminal aliens pose to Oregon's legal U.S. citizens and documented foreign national taxpayer. The cost to Oregon taxpayers to incarcerate an individual Department of Correction prisoner is approximately $77.78 per day. The cost to Oregon taxpayers to incarcerate Department of Corrections criminal alien prisoner population using the January 1st number was approximately $88,000 per day, $618,000 plus per week, and $32 million per year. Even taking into account year 2008 United States federal government state criminal alien assistance program SCAP funding of $6,394,000, if the state of Oregon received the same amount of SCAP funding for fiscal year 2009, the cost to incarcerate criminal aliens to Oregon state government, Oregon's taxpayers, will be at least be $25,856,000. None of my preceding cost estimates for Department of Corrections to incarcerate the 1,136 criminal aliens include dollar amount for legal services, indigent defense, or post-prison supervision. Not all the crimes committed by the 1,136,000 criminal aliens incarcerated by the Department of Corrections or that are incarcerated in Oregon's county jails and correctional facilities appear to be violent crimes against Oregon's legal United States citizens and documented foreign national residents. For example, Department of Correction has 228 criminal aliens incarcerated for crimes that appear to be nonviolent crimes against persons. The numbers and types of crimes committed by the 228 criminal aliens serving time in Department of Corrections prison include 35 for burglary, 32 for driving offenses, 128 for drugs, 5 for forgery, 19 for theft, and 9 for vehicle theft. Of the 1,136,000 criminal aliens incarcerated by DOC, the 228 criminal aliens incarcerated apparently for nonviolent crimes made up 20.07% of the January 1 Oregon state prison population. The economic cost to Oregon's legal U.S. citizens and documented foreign national taxpayers to incarcerate the 228 criminal aliens, excluding any possible SCAP remittance by the federal government, is approximately $17,700 a day, $124,000 a week, and $6,472,000 per year. Returning to House Bill 3364, Oregon taxpayers will benefit economically if the 2009 Oregon State Legislature passes House Bill 3364 by a reduction in the costs associated with incarceration of criminal aliens in Oregon's prisons and county jails and correctional facilities. The passage of House Bill 3364 would grant conditional release for some criminal aliens charged with low-level, nonviolent crimes against persons currently housed in Oregon's prisons and county jails and correctional facilities after they serve one half of their sentence, provided they agree to deportation. To dispel the concerns of anti-crime advocates, once deported, a criminal alien would be subject to federal statutes that would provide up to 20 years in prison for illegally reentering the United States. Representative Barker, representatives, please vote yes on House Bill 3364 so the state of Oregon and county sheriffs can participate in a federal program called Rapid Repat.
Thank you very much, panel. We appreciate your testimony tonight. Our next call, Mary Chance, Jim Elvin, and Wayne Brady. Identify yourself by name for the record.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Barker and members of the committee, my name is Mary Chance. I do reside in Salem. I don't need to reiterate all that's been said. I think you've heard enough about the bill, but I would like to say that definitely I am here in favor of House Bill 3364. I think if I break a law, it's illegal. Be reprimanded. I would not be a draw on the community. I am a taxpayer, and my family would pay for what I have done, or I would pay. We would not get free counsel, so it would save that. There are many, many illegals who are breaking the laws here over and over and over, going to our jails. We're taking care of them. I say let them stay home or send them back home. It's costing us way too much money.
Thank you very much for that testimony.
Chairman Barker and committee, my name is Jim Elvin, and I reside here in Salem. And I, like Mary said, most everything has been said on this bill, but I would like to say that I sure appreciate what you folks are doing on this. It's a fantastic bill the way I see it, something that's been needed for a long time, and it's heartwarming to see this come to the surface. And I appreciate your support. I can't imagine anybody objecting to this bill. I realize now that you've exposed that there are some technicalities that need to be straightened out, and I hope that happens because this is a bill that we really need, and I can't imagine anybody objecting to this. And I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony.
Chairman Barker and members of the committee, my name is Wayne Brady. I'm the vice chairman of the Marion County Republican Party. And the party has been following immigration issues for some time. We've worked with the Marion County commissioners and with the Sheriff's Department, and they've done a lot to improve the situation. I think this is another step in helping out. And I think some of the things that have been said, I mean, I don't need to repeat, but these criminals typically violate the law multiple times before they get caught. And so when you catch them, you know, they may not be a violent offender this time. They may have been other times, or when they get out. So there's some other associated costs that don't really show up in this that are benefits of having a law like this. The other thing is that criminals often start out with petty crimes and get into more major crimes later on. So I think there are benefits beyond just the direct cost saving of the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any questions from the panel? We really appreciate you taking the time to come in on tonight and testify for it.
Okay,
thank you. I'll close the public hearing on. Oh no, one more. I'm sorry, Ms. Meyer. I'm doing the middle of my list here.
There's got to be import to that. Good evening, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We would like to be supportive of the bill. We think we could be with one particular fix. In general, we think any time that there's an opportunity to responsibly reduce our clients' exposure to prison time consistent with public safety, then that's a net win for everyone. I'd like to focus my attention to my comments to line 17 and 18 that would require the inmate to agree to waive the right to obtain appellate review, post-conviction review, or writ of habeas corpus as a condition of participating in the program. We would like to see that at clearly expressly state that the inmate have the opportunity to consult with counsel before agreeing to make that waiver. The reason we think that's important is manyfold, actually, particularly when you have non-native speakers in general and then foreigners in particular. These waiver forms, such that they understand expressly what it is they're waiving, can be way over the head of some of these people to comprehend. They really do need to have a private consultation with counsel as to what the merit is of what it is they're giving up. Sometimes it's the conviction itself that makes the alien deportable. It's not the fact that they're here illegally. It's here that they were here legally and then committed a felony or a crime of moral turpitude, which makes them subject to deportation. So we think that's important. Generally, too, also, there is generally recognized to be an ethical conflict for a lawyer to consult with his client or her client and recommend that they waive post-conviction relief against that lawyer, because what you're asking your client to do is don't ever come after me and say I was inadequate. So we think that could be a problem out there. But if this were expressly stated that the waiver would be conditioned upon consultation with counsel, then we think we could support the bill.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. As we said, this is a work in progress. We thought we'd progress a lot farther than we had before we found all the mistakes. So thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3364. And thank you, everybody, for attending tonight. We're going to return now to business. We'll go back to House Bill, open a work session of House Bill 2394. That's the bill that has to do with juveniles being served subpoenas.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2394 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2394 to the floor with a due pass. Discussion?
Okay. Do we have enough votes?
Six. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Excused.
Representative Krieger?
Excused.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Stigler, would you like to carry that one?
Sure.
Okay. Open a public hearing, work session on House Bill 2395.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2395 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2395 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Excused.
Representative Krieger?
Excused.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Excused.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Carries. Representative Cameron, would you like to carry that one?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Further business? Seeing none, meeting adjourned.